Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, April 30th, 2026. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes just three names: Mary Agnes Pagliuca, 84, of Denver; Patricia Poglogin, no age given, of the Valley; and George Franklin Salby, 83, of Phoenix. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. And now we're going to turn to the business section of the paper. It looks like there are three articles on the business page. The first one is by Aditya Soni for the Reuters News Group. It's entitled "Copilot Rolled Out to Accenture Employees." Microsoft is rolling out its Copilot 365 AI assistant to all of Accenture's roughly 743,000 employees in the biggest enterprise deal for the chatbot, as the software giant seeks to convert more of its vast customer base into paying users. None of the financial details of the agreement were not disclosed by the companies in their joint statement on April 27th. It is a major boost for Microsoft, as just a little more than 3% of its over 450,000,365 enterprise users pay for the $30 a month offering. Slow Copilot adoption and the uneven cloud growth have deepened investor worries over returns from Microsoft's hefty AI outlay. Its shares are down 12% this year after their biggest quarterly drop since the 2008 financial crisis. The move builds on Accenture's plan in 2024 to offer Copilot to as many as 300,000 employees. The company has emerged as one of the most aggressive corporate adopters of AI. Charles LaManna, who heads Microsoft's M365 apps and Copilot platform, told Reuters that efforts to offer multiple AI models, including from Anthropic and tools such as Critique, which uses one model to check another's output, are aiding demand. Microsoft has recently pushed Anthropic's technology aggressively to customers, aiming to reduce its OpenAI reliance while tapping demand for products from the Claude creator. Accenture said the initial Copilot deployment has paid off. About 97% of staff said that Copilot helped them complete routine tasks up to 15 times faster, while 53% reported major gains in productivity. That's according to a self-reported company survey of 200,000 users. Accenture CEO Julie Sweet said, quote, "Our teams are already doing higher value work because of it," unquote. The remark follows recent reports that have raised doubts about productivity gains from AI. A survey of nearly 6,000 senior executives at U.S., U.K., German, and Australian firms, which was published by the National Bureau of Economic Research last February, found nearly 90% said that AI had no impact on employment or productivity over the past 3 years. And that was the article, "Copilot Rolled Out to Accenture Employees." Then, our second article, Amazon unveils AI agents for hiring. This was written by Greg Bensinger for the Reuters News Group out of San Francisco. Amazon, which hires hundreds of thousands of workers every year for the holiday rush, on April 28th, it introduced new software meant to speed up the process by excising a sizable chunk of the human element, that is, the face-to-face job interview. The Seattle-based firm also outlined its new homegrown artificial intelligence design philosophy called humorphism. That's what Amazon said helps humanize AI and adapts to how humans work, not the other way around. Amazon in February said that it would invest up to $50 billion in OpenAI, and Microsoft said on April 27th it would lose exclusive access to some of OpenAI's technology, clearing the path for the ChatGPT creator to sell its products to others. A focus of a recent Amazon Web Services event was autonomous artificial intelligence software, known as agents, that can run processes with little to no human intervention. The hope is that such agents can plan, decide, and act on their own, a fast-growing field that has also sparked concerns over safety and oversight. Alphabet last week signaled it is pushing deeper into enterprise software with its own AI agents, following others like OpenAI and Anthropic. Amazon's new mass hiring software called Connect Talent, which helps firms find, screen, and recruit workers needed for large-scale hiring. Using artificial intelligence, Connect Talent can conduct AI-led interviews around the clock and prepare notes for recruiters, all without human intervention. Amazon last year hired around 250,000 seasonal workers leading up to the holidays. Colleen Aubrey, the AWS Senior Vice President of Applied AI Solutions, said that job candidates would know they are being screened using AI and acknowledged that it was still being refined to sound more convincingly human. She said in a briefing with Reuters before the event, quote, "The experience continues to get better and better each iteration that we go through. There is some art around making that voice interaction natural and human," unquote. Amazon's humorfism philosophy is an attempt to humanize AI, Aubrey said, even as the broad adoption of the technology has sparked concerns that it could lead to job losses. Indeed, the company has tied some of the roughly 30,000 corporate jobs it cut since October to efficiencies gained through AI use. Aubrey said, quote, "How do we translate the human behaviors of working together into a product? That's what we're going after, and hopefully you will see that," unquote. The company on April 28th also introduced a new product called Connect Decisions, which can analyze and compile data for supply chain planning and purchasing. Aubrey said Amazon's own supply chain experiences, such as materials for its network of warehouses, helped create the new software. And that was the article, Amazon Unveils AI Agents for Hiring. Our third article from the business section, firms dust off oil rigs in storage in Venezuela. This was written by Mariana Paraga and Ana Isabel Martinez for the Reuters News Group. Oilfield service companies that for years kept rigs and specialized equipment stored in Venezuela have begun removing them from warehouses for assembly and repair as the government advances a review of oil and gas contracts that could lead to fresh activity, according to four sources involved in the preparations. Since a sweeping reform of Venezuela's main oil law was approved in January, foreign and local producers have been submitting required documentation while negotiating the ratification or amendment of their contracts. The review, which must be completed by the end of July, has already led to some initial agreements for area expansions and some new block awards and asset swaps, prompting many of the involved companies to begin searching for the drilling rigs needed for the new work. At least 9 rigs of between 500 and 1,500 horsepower have been taken out of storage by several foreign firms in recent weeks to prepare for onshore deployment, while another 5 are being assessed before moving, according to the sources. The moves show the service companies are growing more confident of renewed oil production in Venezuela. Now, it's unclear how many rigs and how much specialized oil equipment remains stored. Some companies removed them from Venezuela, while others placed them in storage after Washington, back in 2019, imposed sanctions on the country's energy sector, limiting activities of U.S. service firms like SLB and Halliburton and Baker Hughes and Weatherford International. The equipment being dusted off would service projects operated by joint ventures between the state-run PDVSA and private companies in the Orinoco Belt and Lake Maracaibo, which are the country's two main oil regions. Foreign service providers prefer to work for companies long established in Venezuela that have good payment records, according to the sources. Most PDVSA partners have not completed their new drilling campaign plans, but as part of recent agreements signed with the government, producers like Chevron, Repsol, and Shell have announced fresh projects and output expansions that will require additional rigs. Venezuela's new oil minister, Paula Henao, told investors and providers in recent weeks that the country is also looking for pumps, frequency converters, wellheads, valves, pipelines, gas compressors, and chemicals for drilling, producing, processing, and transporting crude and gas. So if sourced, the rigs and equipment could help boost the country's total production to 1.37 million barrels per day of crude by the end of the year. That's from the current 1.1 million barrels per day. Venezuela's oil ministry, PDVSA, and Chevron did not reply to requests for comment. Repsol and Shell declined to comment. During an earnings call last week, Halliburton said it has been discussing commercial terms with customers for operations in Venezuela after touring some facilities. In a separate call, SLB said Venezuela continues to be an exciting, quote, growth opportunity, unquote. Now, companies with equipment in Venezuela may have an advantage over those planning to import it, as paperwork required both from Caracas and Washington, that's anywhere from contracts to licenses to U.S. Treasury clearance, it's less burdensome and the deployment would be faster. Repairs, however, are expected to be needed before moving many of them to the oil fields where they would operate. If these costs surpass $1 million per rig, medium-term contracts of about 12 months would be needed to justify the expense. An oil executive said, quote, many companies are first reactivating the rigs they have in Venezuela as challenges to import, especially big equipment, remain. The oil executive said bureaucracy and the lack of firm contracts and payment concerns offer after many oil field service firms in past years had to write down their debts related to PDVSA's payment delays. Now, Venezuela's only had two drilling rigs marked as active in the Baker Hughes rig report at the end of March, which sources said are working for Chevron's projects. Smaller workover rigs are typically not included in the list. In Henao's presentation, the ministry identified 93 rigs needed through 2028 to boost oil output, mostly in the Orinoco Belt. At Lake Maracaibo, France's Morel and Prom is expected to complete this year the installation of at least one drilling barge, the second to arrive in recent years in that area, after a jackup rig operated by China Concord Resource Corporation. That's the article, Firms Dust Off Oil Rigs in Storage in Venezuela. We're coming up on 15 minutes past the hour. It's time for us to move on over to the sports section of the paper. Okay, on the front page of the sports section, the big article is entitled Deal with the Devils. And there are four smaller pictures above and below that title that feature different women in college football, college basketball, shooting baskets or going up for a layup, etc. But The subtitle underneath that is Arizona State Among Big Winners in Transfer Portal. This was written by Mitchell Northam for the USA Today. The transfer portal for college women's basketball closed on April 20th. While players remaining in the portal can still commit to new schools, most of the top prospects have already found homes for next season. Some schools saw many players leave, while others were able to bolster their rosters with new talent that, at least on paper, should fit right in. So with the bulk of the portal traffic done, some teams became contenders, while others were left with rebuilding projects. With rosters taking shape and many of the major decisions settled, it's time to evaluate which teams won and lost the transfer portal. Winners? Well, let's start with Arizona State. Coach Molly Miller and her staff did not rest after an impressive debut season with the Sun Devils. Before the portal even officially opened, they secured the commitment of former Tennessee standout Ruby Whitehorn, a former five-star recruit and McDonald's All-American, who averaged 11.6 points per game, 4.1 rebounds, and 1.7 assists per game, while shooting 46.3% from the floor in the 24-25 season for the Lady Vols. When the portal opened, the Sun Devils got several players who should help them win. All Big Ten defender Rashonda Jones, the MAC's leader in field goal percentage Ayanna Sare Darrington, MAC Player of the Year Maddie Morrison, and freshman sharpshooter Ella Ryan from Quinnipiac all will join Arizona State. The Sun Devils should have a roster capable of dancing in March again next year. Oklahoma State. No team made a bigger splash in the transfer portal this offseason than Oklahoma State. J.C. Hoyt has completely revamped her roster after a second-round exit in the NCAA tournament. 9 former Cowgirls entered the transfer portal, but one could make the argument Hoyt and her staff have improved this roster and turned it into one of the best in the Big 12. Oklahoma State signed 2 of USA Today Sports' top 3 players in the transfer portal, landing the nation's leading scorer in Audi Crooks for Iowa State and the dynamic SEC guard Liv McGill from Florida. The Cowgirls also added Ellie Brueggemann, who was 7th nationally in 3-point shooting this past season, and the versatile Rutgers forward Nene Nadaya. The Cowgirls are also a portal winner because despite having 9 players leave, they retained one of their best in Staley Hurd. A starting lineup of McGill, Brueggemann, Hurd, Nadaya, and Crooks is going to be a matchup nightmare. TCU. Coach Mark Campbell is developing a knack for landing talented players out of the portal and getting the most out of them. After the Horned Frogs' second consecutive trip to the Elite Eight, he had some big holes to fill, especially with Olivia Miles and Marta Suarez going to the WNBA. TCU secured commitments from North Carolina's Lainey Grant, Stanford's Laura Somfy, Oklahoma State's Jaden Wooten, and LSU's Bella Hines. Grant, Wooten, and Hines give the Horned Frogs a talented trio of guards to rotate through the backcourt, all of them capable of dishing out assists and splashing three-pointers. Grant shot 42% from behind the arc. Hines shot 37% last season. Wooten ranked 10th nationally in assists per 40 minutes with 7.7. And Somfy should slide into the power forward spot and pair nicely with Clara Silva in the front court. The 12th best recruit in the 2025 class, Somfy averaged 10.8 points and 9.1 rebounds per game as a freshman this season for the Cardinals. Now about Ole Miss. Well, after losing in the Sweet 16 of the 2023 NCAA tournament, Ole Miss coach Yolette McPhee McEwen told reporters, quote, "I'm about to do damage in the portal," unquote. Well, in every off-season since then, she has lived up to that declaration, and she seems to be one of the several coaches in college women's basketball who have adapted best to this new era. This portal cycle was no different for the Rebels, as Coach Yeo landed Tennessee leading scorer Talaysha Cooper, LSU starting guard Jada Richard, Tennessee guard Jada Civil, San Jose State forward Maya Anderson, UMBC guard Jade Tillman, and Illinois State forward Dunlea Washington, the most improved player in the Missouri Valley Conference this season. Kenesha Godfrey, Emily Howard, and Rachel Okoha round out a total of 9 transfer portal additions for Ole Miss. Now, Cooper and Richard are players who will likely be the bus drivers for the new-look Rebels. Trust that Coach Yeo, who has now gone to 5 consecutive NCAA tournaments, will be able to figure out how to make all the new pieces fit. For UCLA, the Bruins went into this portal season needing to replace the production of 6 players who helped them win a national championship before going off to the WNBA. Corey Close and her staff got to work, landing Iowa State's Addie Brown, North Carolina's Alina Arnasalo, TCU's Donovan Hunter, and Arkansas's Bonnie Dees. Arnasalo returns to UCLA as she played for Close as a freshman in the 24-25 season when the Bruins made the Final Four. Now she's back after having a stellar season at UNC where she helped the Tar Heels advance to the Sweet 16. Brown was a big-time get for UCLA after being one of the top players in the portal, as she averaged 13.6 points, 8.1 rebounds, and 5.2 assists a game in her 3-year career for the Cyclones. Dees nearly averaged a double-double as a freshman in the SEC, and Hunter is a veteran guard and a sharp defender who has helped TCU play in back-to-back Elite Eights. Iowa State. Well, 9 players left the Cyclones through the transfer portal this offseason, including 3 that ranked inside USA Today Sports' top 10 of players available. That would be Audie Crooks, Jada Williams, and Addie Brown. And quite frankly, Iowa State hasn't done much work in the portal to replace the production of those 3 stars. Bill Fennelly's team has gone to 6 consecutive NCAA tournaments and 17 of the last 19. But much remains unclear about this roster, and if they will have the talent necessary to continue that run. For Texas, All-American forward Madison Booker remains in Austin, Texas. But right now, this Longhorns roster looks nothing like the ones that have played in the last 2 Final Fours. In addition to graduating Rory Harmon and Kayla Oldacre, Texans lost Jordan Lee, Aliyah Crump, and Justice Carlton to the transfer portal. Lee landed at SEC rival South Carolina, Crump joined Duke, and Carlton remained in-state, going to Houston. Well, the good news for Coach Vic Schaefer is he has 5 ESPN-ranked top 50 recruits coming in. Time will tell if they can replace the production of what the Longhorns will have lost. NC State. The Wolfpack entered the transfer portal season knowing they needed to make some upgrades after a somewhat bumpy season that ended with a second-round exit in the NCAA tournament. And then NC State lost 2 starters to the portal, guard Zam Jones joining ACC rival Louisville, and Tilda Triger going west to Washington. Coach Wes Moore added 6'2" forward Katie Lay from Auburn, but currently, this roster does not look better than the one the Wolfpack fans watched this past season. That was the article all about the college transfer portal, and it was entitled Deal with the Devils. Our second article from the front page of the sports section, Kelly Struggles Again versus Brewers, written by Jose M. Romero out of Milwaukee. The Diamondbacks' 13-2 loss to the Brewers on Tuesday, April 28th, was not even the most lopsided loss the team has suffered this season. Arizona was blown out 17-2 by Atlanta on April 2nd at Chase Field, barely a week into the season. But Tuesday was problematic in the sense that starting pitcher Merrill Kelly, known for good command and consistency over his Diamondbacks career, has struggled for a second straight start. Kelly, who is now 1-2, allowed 5 runs on 6 hits in 5 innings and walked 5 batters. He has 12 walks in 3 starts this season and ran up his pitch count trying to work out of trouble in 3 of his innings. Kelly started the season on the injured list with a back issue and came back earlier this month. He was asked if command of pitches is the last thing to get back to a preferred level when a pitcher has had a lengthy layoff due to injury. Kelly said, "The answer to that for me right now is yes. I've got to stop putting myself in bad situations. I've got to stop making it harder on myself each game. If you look at all 3 games that I have thrown so far, I think that's probably what you could attribute all of them to." Another issue is the taxed bullpen. Despite having a day off on Monday, the Diamondbacks had hoped to get perhaps 2 innings out of reliever Andrew Hoffman, who came on for Kelly in the 6th inning. That would have given the other pitchers in the bullpen some needed rest. Instead, Hoffman was charged with 8 runs on 8 hits and getting 1 out. The Diamondbacks were forced to go to Ryan Thompson and Taylor Clark, 2 relievers who would normally be used in much closer games. Lavulo said of Hoffman, quote, "You've got to be very fine. You've got to be able to attack the zone in a special way to get out of that mess, and he just couldn't do it." There were a couple of bright spots in the loss. Ildemaro Vargas, the reigning National League Player of the Week, extended his career-best hitting streak to 24 games. That's the longest active streak in Major League Baseball. And catcher James McCann threw out 2 runners trying to steal second base in the game and drove in both Diamondbacks runs with a single in the 5th inning. Tim Tawa had the only other hit for Arizona. In the bottom of the 8th inning, the Diamondbacks had Adrian Del Castillo, a catcher and Tuesday's designated hitter, playing first base, while with McCann on the mound lobbing 30 and 31 mile per hour Ephus pitches over the plate. McCann, in his 3rd appearance on the mound this season, tossed his 2nd scoreless inning. 2 days after leaving the game in Mexico City with a dislocation of the joint near the top of his left finger, Del Castillo was back in the Diamondbacks lineup for the series opener against the Milwaukee Brewers on Tuesday, April 28th. Del Castillo isn't catching, though, and is the designated hitter. He was trying on gloves to test his comfort level prior to Tuesday's game. He said, quote, "It's just a jammed finger. Honestly, that's kind of what it feels like. It's not comfortable, but it's still good," unquote. The joint had to be popped back in, he said. Their injury was the result of a foul tip. Lavulo said of Del Castillo, quote, "You talk about toughness and perseverance, it's a pretty good moment," unquote. Diamondback shortstop Geraldo Perdomo remained out with a sprained left ankle that he suffered in Mexico City last Saturday. Lavulo said Perdomo was available off the bench to some extent after taking batting practice. Right-hander pitcher Zach Gallen, hit in his throwing shoulder by a comebacker late last Saturday in Mexico, did some throwing on the off day Monday and is scheduled for a bullpen session on Wednesday, April 29th. The plan for him is to make his next scheduled start. In other injury updates, catcher Gabriel Moreno is still expected to return from an oblique injury on Friday, May 1st at Chicago. He got 5 at-bats as a designated hitter on Monday in an extended spring training appearance and was scheduled to catch for 5 innings in Scottsdale on Tuesday. First baseman Carlos Santana, who is out with a right abductor strain, is getting live at-bats in extended spring training games, as is first baseman Tyler Locklear, who is coming off of fractures to his left elbow and shoulder. Outfielder Jordan Lawler is out with a wrist. He's able to track fly balls and run. Lavulo took Monday's off day in Wisconsin to take a two-hour drive up to Green Bay to see Lambeau Field, home of the Packers. He's an admirer of the legendary Packers coach Vince Lombardi. Lavulo said, quote, "Nobody better to learn from when you're talking about leadership. So I went up there and spent some time at the museum," unquote. He also walked around the stadium, though he could not get inside. He said, quote, "I always appreciated how much Vince Lombardi despised losing. He thought winners win, and they do it consistently," unquote. And that was the article, Kelly Struggles Again versus Brewers. Our third article from the front page of the sports section, written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic, Suns owner praises team's season after playoff elimination. Phoenix Suns team owner Matt Ishbia tweeted his support of his team April 28th after it was eliminated from the NBA playoffs. He posted this on X. "Losing is never easy, but I feel really good today about our team and am already thinking about where we go from here. I'm so proud of this season and want to thank every single person who made this year possible." The defending NBA champion Oklahoma City Thunder won Game 4 on April 28th at Mortgage Matchup Center to complete a sweep of the Suns in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Phoenix returned to the playoffs with a 45-37 record as an eighth after missing the postseason last season with a 36-46 record with the big three of Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. Ishbia continued in his post and wrote, "First, thank you to the fans who supported our team every single day, and the players, coaches, front office, and entire organization who worked so hard to give our community a team to be proud of." The Thunder's star player had praise for the Suns as well after Monday's game. Thunder All-Star guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander said, quote, "First and foremost, there's just a respect level for Phoenix. We know how good of a team they were and how capable they are as players. It's a talented group. They play the right way. They play aggressive. They turn you over. They're good defensively. They have guys that can make shots. They have guys that can space for and shoot, can make the next play. They're a dangerous team if you let them be. We just knew that going into the series," unquote. Suns general manager Brian Gregory received 2 second-place votes for 25-26 NBA Executive of the Year in his first year in that role with the team. Boston Celtics President of Basketball Operations, Brad Stevens, won the award. The voting panel consisted of basketball executives from NBA teams. Ishbia added this in his post, "So many fans have told me how much they loved cheering on this team and were proud of how we competed for 48 minutes every game. This season introduced a new era of Suns basketball, and we have a lot more work to do, which I am truly excited about, and we are just getting started." And that was the article from the front page of the sports section, Suns owner praises team's season after playoff elimination. Our last article, the fourth, from the front page of the sports section, former NBA ref Nunez never forgot his Phoenix roots. And this article was written by Richard Obert for the Arizona Republic. Tommy Nunez Sr., a former NBA referee who died at age 87 on April 24th, was known for helping those in need in South Phoenix. Nunez grew up in Phoenix and became the NBA's first Hispanic referee back in 1972, working for 3 decades in the league. But he never forgot his roots. Nunez, whose son Tommy Jr. followed in his footsteps as a referee, working NBA and college games, had an influential impact on the lives of youth in Phoenix, always organizing tournaments from peewee baseball and basketball leagues, and working as an official in football, basketball, and baseball. He started the Tommy Nunez National Hispanic Basketball Classic in the 1980s in Phoenix, which brought Hispanic players and refs together to raise scholarship money for youths. His son Donnie helped run it with his dad. Donnie said, quote, "We'll probably put a golf tournament together in Dad's name. It seemed like the right thing to do, end it with Dad. That was his thing. He loved that tournament." Nunez Sr. was an NBA referee for 30 years. Michael Jordan was on the court for his final game as an official. In the summers, to stay in shape, Nunez would referee games at Harmon Park Gym in South Phoenix, helping kids find hope beyond the gym. Every summer, Nunez worked for the Arizona Department of Economic Security's Job Training Department and the U.S. Department of Labor's Job Corps for Youth. Donnie said, quote, "He did that every summer because he loved interacting with the kids. He probably spent more money than he made. He'd go check on kids and end up taking 20 kids to lunch somewhere," unquote. During the basketball seasons, he evaluated college referees for the NCAA, sometimes making stops at Grand Canyon University. Donnie said, quote, "When we were little, even in high school, we didn't know the impact he was having on so many lives. And now I'm hearing from people I've never met. You hear things like, oh, he saved my life when I was 18. I was a knucklehead. I wasn't going anywhere. He grabbed me and we talked, and things turned around. I hear from guys from Harmon Park, where my dad used to referee during the summers just to keep running. Guys are sending messages that your dad changed my life. These are people we don't know." Donnie said his dad was a big St. Mary's guy, as many with connections to the high school have said they were helped by him. Nunez attended St. Mary's for 2 years before enlisting in the Marine Corps at 17. He volunteered to coach American Legion baseball and at St. Mark's Elementary School. Nunez is survived by his wife, Mary Ann, with whom he was married for nearly 70 years. He is also survived by sons Donnie and Tommy Jr., daughter Colleen, 13 grandchildren, and 12 great-grandchildren. Services for Nunez will be held May 1st at St. Francis Xavier Catholic Church at 4715 North Central Avenue in Phoenix, beginning with rosary prayers at 8:30 a.m. Visitation will be from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m., and burial will follow at St. Francis Catholic Cemetery in Phoenix. And that was Richard Obert's article entitled, "Former NBA Ref Nunez Never Forgot His Phoenix Roots." And we're at 38 minutes. We've got time for a couple more, another short article. Let's see what we can find on the inside of the sports section. Okay, here are some sports briefs, short little articles. Denver Broncos quarterback Bo Nix recently underwent a successful pre-planned cleanup procedure on his injured right ankle, according to NFL Network on Tuesday. The 26-year-old sustained a season-ending fractured right ankle moments after leading Denver to a win over the Buffalo Bills in an AFC divisional playoff game. Nix underwent surgery 2 days later in Alabama. Nix, who's heading into his third pro season, is expected to be slowed into action throughout Denver's voluntary off-season programs and OTAs shortly after, per the report. The Broncos plan to take it, quote, very easy, unquote, with the quarterback. Then, this next one is the Women's Open will celebrate its 50th anniversary, with players competing for a record purse of $10 million. Although the increase is a relatively modest $250,000 from last year, it marks a consistent trend in prize increases in recent years for the major championship. Quote, "This is the sixth consecutive year that the AIG Women's Open Prize Fund has been increased. These consistent and sustainable investments in the prize fund clearly demonstrate the RNA and AIG's commitment to elevating the championship on the global stage, unquote. That's a quote from RNA CEO Mark Darban. Starting with the inaugural Women's British Open in 1976, when the total prize fund stood at just 500 euros, the event has seen steady prize increases over the years, particularly over the past two decades. 10 years later, the last time the Women's Open was held at England's Royal Lytham and St. Anne's, the site of this year's event from July 29th to August 2nd. That time, 10 years later, the total purse was just $3.25 million, meaning that this year's competition with a $10 million purse is triple that of just 8 years ago. The Women's Open is now the third LPGA major to hit the $10 million mark in prize money, joining the U.S. Women's Open and the Women's PGA, which each have a $12 million purse. Lions pick up fifth-year option for star running back Gibbs. Jahmyr Gibbs just had his stay in Detroit extended. The star running back's fifth-year option was picked up by the Detroit Lions on April 28th, according to ESPN's Eric Woodyard. Gibbs was previously set to enter the final year of his rookie deal, but is now under contract through the 2027 season. Thanks to multiple Pro Bowl appearances, Gibbs will make $14.293 million on the option, which is a sizable boost over the $5.677 million cap hit that he will have in 2026. It is equal to the franchise's tag salary for the position, as defined by the fifth-year option tiers. Gibbs is the latest player from the 2023 NFL draft to have the fifth-year option exercised. Jack Campbell, the linebacker that the Lions also drafted in the first round that year, did not have his option picked up. The star running back figures to be in line for an extension from the Lions in the future, but the team had to make a decision about the option before the May 1st deadline. Gibbs became a star the minute he stepped onto the field with the Lions, recording at least 1,200 scrimmage yards in all three seasons and at least 1,800 yards in each of the last two seasons. Detroit has used him in a variety of ways as a runner and a receiver, making the running back one of the league's most valuable weapons. The 24-year-old has proven to be a durable option as well, playing in all 17 games in each of the two previous seasons. Since debuting in 2023, Gibbs has 856 touches, 5,029 scrimmage yards, and 49 touchdowns. And we're coming up on 44 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section now, and we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. If your birthday is between March 21st and April 19th, that's the sign of Aries. Your horoscope reads, a connection may unintentionally poke you in your sore spot. Are you feeling exposed? Sensitivity rears up. For Taurus, birthdays from April 20th to May 20th, are you feeling the stress of the day? An old, buried wound may surface when you are under pressure. Be gentle with yourself. For Geminis, birthdays from May 21st to June 21st, putting yourself out there can be nerve-wracking. The moon facing off with Chiron can stir up insecurities about fitting in. For Cancer, birthdates from June 22nd through July 22nd, are you wondering how you will be perceived? Insecurities around authority figures or stepping into leadership can have you on edge today. For Leos, birthdates from July 23rd through August 22nd, lingering communications can reveal wounded beliefs today. Does a truth expose holes in a worldview that no longer fits? For you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, are you facing a dependency fear? Having to rely on someone else's resources can feel triggering. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, focus on your needs. Finding your balance will be challenging if you let a conflict get the best of you. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are you being too hard on yourself? Take a step back from self-judgment. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, be bold. Share what you have overcome. Difficulties that you faced earlier in life may serve as wisdom when shared. Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th, how does the past influence your future? Root-level wounds may surface today. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birthdates. Something you try to learn may not stick today. Are you convinced that you can't understand it? Just refrain from jumping to conclusions. And for Pisces, birthdates from February 19th to March 20th, does your self-worth feel at risk? Comparison can be a slippery slope. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. First letter kind of goes like this. Dear Abby, my partner recently allowed a friend to stay in our home without telling me in advance. My partner knows unannounced guests deeply affect my mental well-being and sense of safety. We had agreed I would be given at least 2 weeks' notice for any visitors. That did not happen because the guest was going through a difficult time. Now, while I have compassion and I tried my best to be flexible, I also recognize that our home is not a healing center or a place to bring chaos. What I told would be a short stay turned into an open-ended one, and my peace was severely disrupted. Shared spaces were left messy. Personal belongings spread throughout the house. Decor rearranged, boundaries ignored. The guest even began moving items from a van into our home. When we all tried to calmly discuss a departure, the guest talked over me, attempted to analyze me, and wanted us to work around their schedule rather than respect our home and needs. When they suggested staying in the van outside and coming inside only at certain times, I finally said, I want our home back, and made it clear that this arrangement would not work for me. What hurts me most is feeling unsupported by my partner. This situation has created tension, and I'm left wondering how we can repair the damage and restore peace in our relationship, and more important, our home. Signed, Home Invasion in Colorado. And Abby responds, Dear Home Invasion, I understand why you justifiably felt invaded. You and your partner view your home differently. You need quiet and solitude, while your partner is more outgoing. The relationship is repairable if you can talk and reestablish your basic ground rules. Can you do that to the satisfaction of both of you? If this was a one-time thing, let it go. However, if it happens regularly, you may need to rethink the relationship and make different living arrangements. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, I was in a relationship with my daughter's father for 11 years. From the beginning, he lied, manipulated, and cheated. My family was aware of it. When I finally had had enough and left, my family decided to maintain a relationship with him, like dinners, parties, camping, holidays. He is not a good person. I poured my heart out to let them know how badly what they were doing was hurting me. And that was 6 years ago. And they are all still going strong. My family and I have not spoken in 5 years. My heart is broken, It can never be repaired. The damage is done. I no longer want a relationship with them. My heart still hurts, and I don't know how to get beyond that pain. Can you help? Signed, Suffering in New York. And Abby responds, Dear Suffering, I am sorry for the pain you continue to experience because of your shattered family. I wish I could make it dissipate. But the person you need to consult, and by this I mean talk to, would be a licensed psychotherapist. While your pain may not disappear overnight, it may lessen considerably if you do. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. At 51 minutes past the hour, it's time for us to take a look at some comic strips. In the comic strip, Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. In the first frame, Dagwood's at the front door, and here's the mailman arriving, and he's holding up a letter to give to Dag. And he says, The neighborhood buzz is that Giselle Gumpman is dating the hottie aerobics instructor. And Dagwood says, I don't want to hear it. And in the second frame, the mailman holds up his phone and says, Well, actually, I just saw that juicy tidbit on Facebook. So in the last frame, Dag's going into the house and he goes up to Blondie, who's sitting at her computer, and he holds up his phone and says, Well, check out this latest bombshell about Giselle Gumpman. And Blondie turns and says, Yeah, with the hottie aerobics instructor. Got it. So I guess the electronic news is traveling very fast. That was Blondie. And then in Zitz, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, Mom's sitting at the kitchen table, and she says, Jeremy, will you put some ice in this for me? And she hands him a glass, and he says, Sure. And then she says in the second frame, And don't use your fingers this time. Okay, okay, he says. Well, in the last frame, we see her saying, I don't mean to sound bossy, I just don't like germs. And Jeremy says, Well, I completely understand. As he uses his toes to put the ice cubes in the drink. And that was Zitz. And then in Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, in the first frame, Private Beetle says to Lieutenant Fuzz, Sarge really likes his fast food. And Lieutenant Fuzz says, Yeah, but he overdoes it. And then in the next frame, Lieutenant Fuzz says, It takes 5 Happy Meals to make him happy. And there sits Sarge Snorkel at his desk, and there's 5 Happy Meals in sacks right in front of him. And he is smiling. And that was Beetle Bailey. Hagar the Horrible, drawn by Chris Brown, just 2 frames. And in the first frame, Hagar says to his wife Ilsa, We now have a driverless wagon. I trained the horse to obey voice commands. And his wife Helga goes, Out to dinner. And they don't move very far because in the second frame, Hagar says, It still needs work. And the horse is now stopped eating grass in the field. I guess the horse is out to dinner. In Peanuts by Charles Schulz, Charlie Brown's in his Bing Bag chair in front of the TV set. Snoopy is on top of the TV set looking over the edge down at it. The phone rings. Charlie Brown picks it up and says, Hello. Oh, hi. No, nothing much. Just sitting here watching the lower half of a movie. I guess Snoopy's taken up more of the screen than Charlie would like. Anyway, that was Peanuts. In the comic strip Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, Dad's pounding on the door. Wanda, open the door. And he says, the bridesmaid dress can't be that bad. And in the third frame, we see the door open. And from inside, we hear Wanda say, Oh, yeah? And Dad says, Ooh, that's a lot of fuchsia. And that was Baby Blues. Then, in Pickles, drawn by Brian Crane, There's Earl sitting on the sofa reading the paper. The dog Roscoe is next to him, laying on the sofa. Nelson, the grandkids, is laying on the top edge of the back of the sofa, and he says, "Grandma says her hair has split ends. Does your hair have split ends, Grandpa?" And he says, "I don't know, don't care." And Nelson says, "You know, I think maybe you do have split ends. It looks like they're split all the way apart. And there's not much up there on top of Grandpa's head." Anyway, that was Pickles. And then in Crankshaft, by Tom Batuk and Dan Davis, there's the Ohioana Book Festival, and there's a lady sitting at the desk, and she's got a pile of books, and she's got a black magic marker. She's apparently signing books. And this lady comes up and says, "Would you sign my Kindle?" Oh, boy. That's Crankshaft. And Dennis the Menace, drawn by Hank Ketchum. One frame. There's a kid sitting in a sandbox. And Dennis comes up and says, "Well, it's nice, Timmy. But without toys, it's just a box of sand." And that was Dennis the Menace. Before we go, we want to wish happy birthday to some celebrities. Let's see here. Meryl Osmond, the singer from the Osmonds, he turned 73 today. Then we've got Johnny Galecki, the actor from The Big Bang Theory, turns 51. And actress Kirsten Dunst turns 44. And actress Gal Gadot turns 41. And rapper Travis Scott turns 35. Congratulations and happy birthday. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the Reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, April 30th, 2026. Have a great day.